You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 25th of May 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Well, we actually have a special guest today, but before I introduce her, I've got a bit of sad news that we have to that I'm afraid I'm going to have to talk about a little bit. Simon Harris, who I interviewed on here about 6 weeks back, unfortunately he's passed away. There were a few messages last week that let us know that he's had the coronavirus, or it seemed like that. He was having intense problems with breathing and a sore throat, and then I think about 4 or 5 days later we got the news that he's passed away. It's a great loss to nationalism, because he was doing a lot of revisionist work into Spanish history and the Spanish Civil War, and he was quite an intellectual. He was a very good speaker, and it's very sad news, but I don't want that to really affect today's podcast, because I'm very pleased to say that we do have a special guest today. We have Laura Towler from the Patriotic Alternative. Laura, good morning to you. Good afternoon to you. Sorry. How are you doing?
Hello, Sven. I'm doing very well, thank you. I know we've met a couple of times in real life, but this is the first time that we've spoken online. And just to reiterate what you've just said about Simon, it's been such a big loss to the community. I don't think people realised how valued he was until he was no longer here. And, you know, so many people just felt so close to him. And for me, he reminds me of my dad. He's just such a gentle, you know, well-spoken, thoughtful person, and it's such a loss to the community. I think Mark's doing a special PWR episode this week where they'll be talking about Simon, which will be nice. But I just wanted to mention that Dion has got a GoFundMe going for a wreath for him, and I think they've actually met the total amount, but the rest of the money will go to his family if anybody wants to support that campaign.
That's excellent. That is good news. Well, he's passed away, but new life is always coming into the world, and new nationalists are coming up through the ranks. And I really wanted to find out how you first got into nationalism, really, before we go any further. I mean, were you always nationalist inclined, or did you originally have a liberal viewpoint, or how did you come to get involved in nationalism?
Well, really, I've always been culturally on the right. I've always been very patriotic, and I've always been very close to my grandparents, you know, enjoyed watching old movies and listening to old music and stuff like that. But I think it probably wasn't as conscious for me until I was a teenager and I moved to Bradford for a couple of years, which is a city in England which is full of Pakistani Muslims. And that was just my wake-up call, really. It was a big red pill for me. It was horrible living in Bradford. And then after I graduated from university, I got a job where I ended up travelling around the country, visiting other cities, and just to learn that there were other Bradfords out there, you know, places like Birmingham, Luton, Leicester, where you felt like a stranger in your own country. It just shook me up, and I just thought, yeah, I don't like this and I don't want it. So I ended up starting writing for Defend Europa. That was my first position about 3.5 years ago. And then it's just progressed from that, really. I started on YouTube, and then me and Matt Collett became friends, and he asked me to be the deputy leader at PA. But yeah, it's kind of been something that I've been shoved into, because I'm a huge, huge introvert, and being a minor e celeb, it's just not a natural role for me at all. And it's something that I actually kind of shy away from. And sometimes I just want to turn the internet off and just get away from it all. But I think a lot of us feel this duty towards our country, and we just think if we don't say anything, then who will? So yeah, it's one of those things which I've kind of been pushed into, but I do feel very passionate about the stuff that I talk about.
Well, you can tell that from all the content that you put out. So you saw it as your civic responsibility to do something, and instead of looking for organisations or groups that were doing that, you started doing it yourself. Now, I can sympathise with that. I mean, when I got into nationalism, the BNP had this terrible toxic name, the National Front had this terrible toxic name, and yet you can see that there's all these problems that are going on in the country, and just crying out for somebody to speak out about this and talk about this and do research into it and highlight this. And that was when I first came across you, was when you were writing for Defend Europa, and I followed the Radio Europa series. And one thing that really impressed me was the fact that you didn't put your face out there. You hid your face. So all your content stood on the content itself, what you'd written, what you were saying. You didn't have like a following of people that just like looking at you for what you look like. And that's pretty rare. Do you know what I mean? I was impressed by that.
Yeah, well, I don't go on camera still today, apart from if it's a patriotic alternative stream or conference or something, because I think now I'm kind of going down the politics route with Matt Collett. I have to put my face out there begrudgingly because it's more personable for people, and you can't be a politician, even if it is a deputy sort of supportive role, if you don't show yourself. So I kind of feel like I have to do it now. But yeah, like I said at the start, it's not about wanting fame or attention for me. It's because I actually care about the things that I'm talking about. And I talk about very serious topics on my YouTube channel, and I write about very serious topics. So the attention side is not a plus, it's a negative, a burden that has to come with it, I guess.
Yeah, it seems to have been sort of forced upon you. You've always seemed to have been the driving force behind Defend Europa and Radio Europa as well. It seemed like the other people that you were working with were sort of following your lead, which again, it's not very often that women take the lead like that, or are capable of doing it, and are capable of doing it on their own two feet without, you know, just showing this image, as I was saying. So how did you first come across Mark then? Did he reach out to you, or did you come across his content online?
I think it was Jason and Jared, you know, No White Guilt and The Great Order, who contacted me. I knew Jared because he'd written for Defend Europa before, and they asked me to be on the after party. So I streamed with them, and then I think they just introduced me to Mark, and Mark asked me to be on PWR. It was called This Week on the Alt-Right back then. And I was very nervous on that stream because I'd never really done anything like that before. And me and Mark just got on. We just got on like a house on fire, and his audience seemed to really take to me as well, which I didn't really realise back then when I did that stream how hostile they can be towards people sometimes. I remember when Lucy Brown went on and they just didn't like her at all, but they seemed to really take to me. So Mark invited me back on again. And then, we just formed a friendship and started working together quite a lot behind the scenes. And then when he formed Patriotic Alternative, he asked me to be the deputy leader. And I was just like, yes, let's do it. I feel very passionate about Pierre. And we don't cook on any issues. I don't think we focus on issues that we shouldn't too much, but we're just honest about all the threats that we face. And that's what I was looking for, really, you know, somewhere where I could just 100% tell the truth, and somewhere where we could just be completely unapologetic about everything. And that's what we do at Pierre. So yeah, I love it.
Well, I'm glad people are sort of, you know, pushing you to get more involved, because you're certainly capable of it. I remember when you said you were first hosting your first show, and it had always seemed like you were the main voice in Radio Europa anyway, but you were getting quite nervous about, you know, actually doing a solo show. And I can remember being like that myself as well. And yeah, I was impressed with that. And before you got really working with Mark, you were very supportive of Fraser Anning, and I really sympathise with your excitement at the time of that. And you were really trying to highlight what he was doing in Australia and draw attention to him and get more people to support him. I always thought it was a shame that you weren't actually able to get him on your show. Did you have any contact with him at the time?
Yeah, I actually spoke to his wife on email a little bit, and she seemed really excited that I'd made a video in support of Fraser Anning. And she said that he would talk to me, but then I think something happened with their finances and they ended up going to America for a while. And then they just didn't reply to my last couple of emails. So I'm not really sure what's going on with them at the moment, but he's not a perfect guy. You know, there have been a couple of things he said where I've been like, oh, for God's sake, Fraser. But he was no apologies. I remember when he used the words final solution when he gave a speech and the media tried to attack him for it. And rather than him backing down and apologising, he just said, I'm not apologising, I don't do that. And I was like, yes, I wish we had somebody like that in Britain. But he was talking about South Africa and the farm murders over there. He was talking about usury. He was talking about demographics, everything. And he, you know, got attacked by the usual suspects, but he didn't seem to want to back down. So, yeah, I was and still am a big Fraser Anning fan. It's just a shame that he doesn't seem to be doing anything nowadays.
Yeah, I think he didn't get voted in the last time, did he? It was very, very unfortunate because he had this big rise to power, I guess you could say, where he had a lot of influence and a lot of people were listening to him. And yeah, he just seems to have been quiet for the last 2 years. But then, as you say, you met up with Mark and you started doing streams with Mark and getting involved in Patriotic Alternative, and also with the documentary that you made on the survey, We Were Never Asked. Now, I think that came about, you were doing the survey just about the time that the first Patriotic Alternative conference was beginning. Am I remembering that right?
Yeah, so we went out and collected the data in August last year, and then the first PA conference was September, and then the documentary came out in October. So it was kind of all around the same time that we launched PA, and then we did the We Were Never Asked project. But yeah, that was brilliant. I think it was about 50 people who volunteered there Saturday in the middle of August, a boiling hot day it was, and went out and surveyed the public on how they thought about us becoming a minority in Britain. An overwhelming majority of people, it was just under 70% of people, said that they thought it was a bad thing. Only 4.8% said they thought us becoming a minority was a good thing, and the rest felt uncomfortable answering or said no strong feelings, that kind of thing. So it was a great project, and we're going to do another piece of activism this year as well. It's just that a lot of things are on hold at the moment because of the lockdown in the United Kingdom, but we have lots of things planned. Lots of things are going on behind the scenes. We have the camping trip. We have the next conference, which is in autumn. So yeah, it's busy, busy. It's just frustrating having to hold back on the IRL stuff at the moment.
Well, it's interesting because it was like a different form of activism. I don't think anybody had thought of taking a survey of the people before and then publishing it and making a documentary out of it. I mean, have you had any interest in asking questions about it from the mainstream media at all?
No, we tried to contact them to ask them to help us publicise it. And we knew that they wouldn't. We knew that they would try to kind of shun the study or make it seem illegitimate as much as they could. But we contacted them because we thought if they do that, then we can publicise their response, you know, and say like, look, they're ignoring us, but they published this study the day before. So we contacted a load of academics from the, you know, the area of like demography and just all these studies about opinion polls on immigration and that kind of stuff. And some of them just refused to talk to us. And the others tried to make out like the study wasn't genuine or the study was it wasn't a representative sample and stuff, and people that say to us, no, I'm sorry, it's not a representative sample, you haven't got an equal amount of males and females filling in the response. And then we were like, well, actually we do, you know, it's 50% male, 50% female. And then they'd go, oh, well, you haven't done the right locations. And we were like, well, actually we have, you know, we've done working class areas, upper class areas, north, south, Midlands. And then they'd move on to the next thing and they were like, well, you haven't done this. And in the end, they just ended up calling us racist and said, you can't ask this question, and blocked us on social media. So we screenshotted their response and publicised it in a stream one day, but the media wouldn't talk to us about it, which, I mean, obviously we know why they wouldn't do that, but it was funny that they were happy to publicise a study the week before, which said that 90% of people in Britain think that you don't have to be white to be English. All the media were happy to publicise that story. And that was a sham study that was very easy to pick apart. I did pick it apart on my YouTube channel. They used loaded questions. They didn't add the responses up properly. They didn't add the percentages up properly. It was just, a nightmare study, but they were happy to publicise that, but they wouldn't publicise ours.
They're so biased that it infuriates me the way that they pretend to put across this balanced viewpoint, and it's not. It's entirely anti-white, and it gets worse by the day. But I think it drives more people to the alternative media. It drives people to the channels on YouTube and to Radio Albion and all the other great content creators that we have. And you haven't just done the We've Never Asked documentary. You've made quite a few different videos. I know that for a while you were concentrating on the education system and the degenerate ideas that are being taught to our young children. I think you interviewed someone that was at school, and he was letting you know the sort of stuff that he was being taught that was really shocking. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I interviewed a 15-year-old boy who watches my YouTube videos. He sent me a lot of evidence of what he was being taught at school. Now, obviously, I had to be careful because legally he's a child. So what I did was I got my friend to read out the messages that he'd sent me and completely concealed his identity. But basically, he was telling me that they just horrible stuff that they were taught. And he sent me all evidence of it as well, you know, photographs of like displays up in the school and stuff. One of the things, this is the thing that annoyed me the most. On St. George's Day, their head teacher gave an assembly and taught them reasons why they should feel ashamed to be English on St. George's Day. I thought that was disgusting. He showed me his homework, which was write the benefits of converting to Islam, stuff like this. It was just, they get LGBT stuff into basically every subject, whether it's Spanish or maths or biology. It's all LGBT stuff. The names in textbooks are always, you know, like Muhammad says this or Mrs. Patel says this, and it's just absolutely everywhere. I didn't actually realize how bad it was until I spoke to this student. And then afterwards, a lot of other people contacted me, sending me evidence of their work, whether they're teachers or students themselves or parents. And it just seemed to have created this uproar, really, in the British nationalist community. And this is why we decided at Patriotic Alternative to launch our alternative curriculum, which is a project that we just started this month. We have a tab up on the website at the moment, but it just says this is what we're going to be doing coming soon. And basically, Mark and I are working with a team of, so there's 6 people in the main team, but we also have about another 10 to 15 people who are interested that we're going to bring together. And it's basically teachers, ex-teachers, tutors, people who work in the education sector of the government, etc. And we're creating an alternative curriculum. So if parents want to homeschool their children, they can come to our website and they can download resources, whether that be a video, a document, a lesson plan. And we hope if Patriotic Alternative are able to grow, then the end goal is to have our own homeschool communities across the country. So I'm engaged at the moment. We're waiting for the lockdown to lift so that we can get married, and we'll be having children straight away, hopefully, you know, all being well with health and stuff. And we'd like our children to be part of this homeschool community. So yeah, big things are happening with PA, and I think education will be a central focus of us, just because the system is so broken and corrupt from start to finish, from nursery school children up to university and PhD. Did you see the article the other day of the mother from Hull in East Yorkshire, and her child was being taught about hardcore pornography at school, her 11-year-old child? It's just disgusting.
I've seen quite a few articles like that, and they're asking them questions like that, and drawing equivalence between normal heterosexual sex and saying oh it can happen between people of all different ages. I mean, that they're trying to push in this pedophile idea at the moment, which is really horrific.
I mean, it's love, even, is love, they say, yeah, and it's like, yeah, a pedophile thing. She was being taught about transgender porn as well, 11-year-old child at school. Why does an 11-year-old need to know about that?
It's absolutely horrific. I think it's worse in America, and it gets worse by the year. I mean, I can remember when I was at school, and my brother went to school 3 or 4 years after me, and I can remember thinking that the education had really been dumbed down just in that 4 years. And if you look at it today, and you look at the degenerate ideas, they get worse and worse by the year. I mean, one of the ways we're trying here at Radio Albion to counter this idea that white people and British people in particular they shouldn't be proud of themselves. We've been doing a series on the Greatest Britons, where we've been picking out great British heroes and looking at their lives and trying to encourage us to see ourselves as who we really are and to emulate the best of our people in the past. And part of that is because kids haven't been taught to do that. They're not taught that in school. As you say, they're just taught LGBT stuff or multicultural stuff. They're not taught about these great ancestors that we had. And just, another sideshow videos as well that's been very popular is the Granny Towler ones, which I've really yeah. enjoyed.
Grandma Towler. Yeah, I'm very close to my grandma. I would probably say I'm actually closer to my grandma than I am to my mum. And that's not me slagging off my mum, because I'm close to my mum as well. But me and my grandma just have a connection. We're just completely on the same wavelength. And my grandma's really switched on, and she's really smart, and I can talk to her about anything, really. She's always, spreading hate information on Facebook and stuff and getting suspended from Facebook. She's one of these grandmas that shares those edgy memes where it's like, immigrants coming over with smartphones and designer clothes and stuff, and then she'll get suspended from Facebook for doing it. But I just like to have conversations with normal people, normal, maybe working class people like my grandma, who she's seen the country change before her eyes. So when I interviewed her, I've interviewed her twice on YouTube, people seem to have really enjoyed hearing an older person's perspective and hearing about what it used to be like. So, yeah, I'd love to actually be able to get out and interview more just normal folk, people who the media won't speak to. Because at the minute, it seems to be like this kind of London metropolitan elite bubble. And those are the people that they get onto the talk shows. And those are the people who ask questions on Question Time. And it would be nice just to speak to, Keith and Susan from Bolton, who actually are sick of immigration and are sick of not hearing English when they get the bus to work or whatever. So I think putting out the voices of just normal folk is something that Pierre will definitely try to prioritise in the future.
Older people have really interesting things to say. I mean, I know some fairly old people, and they'll talk about before they had electricity, before they had television, what life was like for themselves. I'm absolutely fascinated by it, and it helps to ground us again in who we are. We've become so separated from nature. Everything is so synthetic now, especially in the cities, and we forget, and it just separates us from the nation and from the world around us. So it's very endearing to hear you talking to your grandmother like that, and she has a lot of interesting things to say as well. And did she influence you to be patriotic, do you think, when you were younger? What sort of influences did you have in nationalism and growing up?
Yeah, I think my grandparents on my mum's side and my dad's side, I was very close to both of them. And I've always spent a lot of time with them. So I think that definitely was a big influence on me turning out like this. And my dad as well. I'm very close to my dad, and he loves like old movies and, old music and stuff. He's a big fan of George Formby and that kind of stuff. And I just grew up watching these old black and white films and seeing a simpler time, I think. And yeah, just seeing what's happening today, especially in places like London with the knife crime and the censorship laws and, the acid attacks and the murders. And I guess I have this nostalgia for a place that I wasn't even alive in. But it was something that I grew up with, because I used to have, speak to older relatives all the time and watch stuff. And like, for example, when we were kids, because we didn't have much money, we used to go on holiday to Scarborough, seaside, because I'm from Yorkshire. I think Scarborough's in North Yorkshire, go to the arcades and play on the 2p machines and have a ride on the donkey and stuff. And it was simple, but it were British. And even though we didn't have much money, we had that sense of community. And now I feel like that's been destroyed. I feel like it's been taken from us. That's why we decided to call our documentary We Were Never Asked, because we were never asked if we wanted to change all these things, for us to become minorities in our own country, for our culture to be eroded and our people to be eroded. And it just makes me sad. And that's the primary reason why I'm involved in all of this, because I just love England and I love the English. And as an extension of that, Britain and Europe and the West. And I can't just not say anything, because we can't let them get away with this. Do you know what I mean? It means too much.
Yeah, we have to put a stop to it. I mean, you've obviously got a love for traditionalism, and you can see the way that modernity is just tearing away everything that is good about the world. I think you were influenced by Oswald Mosley as well, weren't you? Is that someone that you were particularly interested in?
Yeah, I'm not allowed to talk about him anymore now. I keep getting told off about it.
Seriously?
I am influenced by Oswald Mosley. I think he was an incredibly good person and a brave person. And he's a big inspiration to me. You know, when I'm getting attacked from all angles sometimes, I sometimes think, you know, what would Oswald do? How would he handle this? And he gives me a lot of encouragement to continue and to not get upset by stuff and, you know, to be strong and to be brave. But I just find a lot of inspiration in his books. I've read, I think, most of his books. And it's not even about fascism. It's just how he explained the system back then and how it was broken. We're experiencing exactly the same problems today. And he said that the system back then was out of date. And now it's 100 years later. So if it was out of date back then, what is it now? And I just, I just found him to be a very brave, good, honest person who loved his people unashamedly. So he's a big influence on me. But yeah, like I said, I'm not allowed to talk about it now because I need to watch my optics, apparently. So,
well, he was never really that into the racial side of things, was he? He was more about the social justice side of things, rather like I've forgotten his name in America, but he was more about raising up the standards of the working class, and he was never really speaking out much against the Jews or anything like that. I think he's been given a really bad name, and when you actually look into it, there's not really much that you can see as to why he was given that bad name. He was against the war. He was locked up for no reason. He was loyal to the country, but he was locked up, and all the British Union of Fascists were locked up under Regulation 18B. And while they were locked up, they smeared them, basically. They made them out to be traitors to the country. And I think that's what really gave them the bad name, because we didn't have we didn't have the alternative media back then. We didn't have the internet. And what people were reading were just these slanders of him. So after the war, his career was really gone. But yeah, definitely an inspiration. I mean, there are far worse people you could say that you were influenced by than Oswald Mosley.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything that he said which is offensive. And his book, Tomorrow We Live, which is probably my favourite book. I'm going to start a Bookgate 2.0, no matter. But it just, the way that he explains how the system that we have just, it doesn't work. You know, this talking shop at Westminster, as he described it. And he talks about the negative things that the working class are having to go through. And I just think if you actually read that book, you would agree with pretty much everything that he says. But it's just the scary F word, isn't it? Fascism. You know, he was the British Union of Fascists, therefore it's the ultimate evil. So people won't even look at anything that he said, which is a shame, because I think a lot of people would be inspired by him today.
Well, he started out with the Labour Party, didn't he? And then Conservative Party for a while?
He crossed the floor, didn't he? And then ended up starting his own.
And back
his
then,
own movement.
Yeah, and it was before the war that he was calling it the British Union Fascists. The Conservative Party was supporting Benito Mussolini, and they saw the fascism movement as very positive. It was all after that terrible war that all this stuff got slandered. I mean, Britain used to be a very patriotic, nationalist country, and since the war, everything's fallen apart. And we need brave people like yourself, Laura, standing up for us, speaking out for us, making the great content that you do, and bringing more people to nationalism. I mean, the speeches that you've given, you're fairly new to speeches. I think you seem fairly nervous at the first one at the Patriotic Alternative Conference, but by the second one, there was a massive improvement. I mean, had you been giving speeches in between time or practicing or something? I mean, it really was a huge improvement.
No, the first one I was very nervous because it was the first speech that I'd ever given, and it was an audience of 100 people at the first conference, and I think I spoke fast because I was nervous and I kind of just wanted to get it over with, so I spoke a bit fast on the first one. But then the second peer conference, which was in March this year, that was actually my third speech. So I did give one. I spoke at the traditional Britain group Christmas do. That was a weird one. I just had to stand on a chair at the end of a room in a pub and give a speech. I spoke about identity and what it means to be British. So the next PA conference was actually my third speech. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I just felt a little bit more comfortable in that one. I did actually still feel nervous, and people told me that you couldn't tell. So I don't know, maybe I'm just good at hiding it. But Mark keeps doubling the size of the audience. So as soon as I get used to a certain audience, the next one is it's twice as big. So
yeah, it must be quite nerve-wracking looking out and seeing, you know, 200 faces there looking at you. It, yeah, you know, you've got some bottle there to stand up there and speak. And, you know, it's a great stuff that you're talking about. It's very, very, very inspirational, very encouraging. And yeah, I'm just really pleased that we've got someone like you as a part of the movement, Laura. Thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.